Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Season 7, episode 117. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd once again on this Monday is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Monday. How was your weekend?
It was good until the Pens game. That kind of put a damper on things. let me ask you real quick. I don't want to get too sidetracked with this because I know people don't really care about it, but with the NBA Finals, do you care that these games are blowouts, or do you like watching just a dominant team like Golden State blow out the Cavs?
I prefer closer games, I think, obviously. I'm not a huge basketball fan by any shape of the imagination, but I find myself always rooting against any Cleveland team. So, I have nothing against LeBron. I just find myself rooting against Cleveland teams, and I admit I liked Steph Curry as well too. So I've been kind of, not that it's a huge factor with me, I've been rooting for Golden State, and I must admit I haven't watched every single minute of every single game so far, but I did tune in to the second half of that game last night, and boy, it was at one point it was a 6-point game, I think, there in the third quarter. Then Golden State just put it on them there. But obviously when the Pens are involved, it makes it a lot. You're not on your seat as much if they get a 2 or 3 goal lead, and that obviously they had the 1-0 lead the other night against Nashville, and that evaporated really seems very very quickly there. I think more surprised of anything that Tommy Shaw played Renegade. During one of the intermissions, you would think someone from the Nashville organization said you could play anything, but don't play Renegade. I found that kind of entertaining. So we'll see if the Pens can get back on track. When is it? Tonight? Is game 4 there. Hopefully they can get on track and take a 3-1 series lead there in the Stanley Cup final. Week 3 of the Steelers OTAs got underway today, and as expected, probably not a shock to anybody, is the fact that Mike Tomlin chose to use Monday as the annual team building exercise, and the team went to Dave and Buster's, returned to Dave and Buster's, because I believe last year Mike Tomlin changed it up and took the team bowling. So they're back at Dave and Buster's on this Monday, and I have no issue with that whatsoever, because less likely that a player will get injured while shooting basketball arcade hoops and playing some of those driving games or whatnot. So do you like the fact that Mike Tomlin uses one day every year for this?
Yeah, no, I think this is a time of year not only to build things on the field, but build relationships off it as well. And so I think, yeah, I have no problem with it. You want to be a locker room, you want to be a family, and create those strong bonds now. So when you're sitting in week 12 or week 14, you got a big game coming up, or you're coming off a tough loss. You look at the Cowboys game last year. You have the strength and those relationships to rally and rise above. And it's kind of where it starts now. And so you can lean on that later in the year. So I think it's really valuable, and I think it's a cool thing Tomlin does.
And they will, of course, return to the field on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and that will put a wraps on the third week of OTAs. Unfortunately, on days like today, you're probably only going to get interviews from Steelers.com with players and reactions to team building. And as I stated, we don't expect any serious injuries to happen today. And for the Baltimore, speaking of on that topic, boy, and when we kind of mentioned one injury on, I believe, the Friday podcast with the Ravens, had lost Tavon Young, second year cornerback out of Temple, to a torn ACL, and they got some more bad news on Friday with Dennis Pitta. Unfortunately for them, another hip injury for Dennis Pitta, and this is probably it for him, right?
I think retirement is the word that's being used, and that's unfortunate, obviously, for Baltimore and Pitta himself. You know, he's a talented tight end. Even though he was working his way back from the injury last year, he still had a successful season. So you know, the Ravens are losing a lot on offense. You know, I tweeted it out after the injury. They've lost four of their top five third down targets last year, and that offense was not good to begin with, and they've taken a step back. So, you know, someone asked me, are they going to be able to score 20 points per game this year? And honestly, I think it's going to be tough for them.
Me as well. And you have to wonder at this point, and I kind of mentioned this in my when reporting the news on Pitta the other day after it happened, that, you know, yeah, they have a lot of tight ends on that roster right now, talking about the Ravens. But when you think about Max Williams, who's currently coming off of a knee injury from last year that forced him to miss some games, you have Crockett Gilmore, who missed several games with, geez, you name it with him. And I think the back injury was maybe the most serious of him. And Benjamin Watson, people probably forget that he tore his Achilles during that first game of the season. I think it was against the Lions, if memory serves me, last year. So, yes, they have a lot of experienced tight ends on that roster, but all these guys are coming back from injuries. And when you think about the fact that Pitta had really career numbers, I think, in receptions and receiving yardage last year, that's a huge blow for them. And like I said, you know, a guy like Gary Barnidge is out there. Is that something you think they'll consider?
Yeah, I think they're going to be in the market for one of two guys, either Jeremy Maclin, who was released by the Chiefs over the weekend, or Barnidge. Now, I know Macklin's gotten interest from Buffalo. He could end up there, but bottom line, expect Baltimore to add some sort of pass catcher next couple weeks.
And look, yeah, I realize this is the Ravens, and everybody likes to hate on the Ravens. And I think, you know, there were some kind of off-color comments, I guess, if you will, in the post that I did on Pitta. I'd much rather face teams. You know, look, it's fun to hate on the Ravens, but, you know, never do I wish injury on another player. And, you know, I always prefer to see if the Steelers can beat teams at full strength as opposed to being able to just walk all over them because of injuries. Mm-hmm. So a huge blow for them. As we mentioned, two players already lost with what appears to be the season for them. And like it or not, the Steelers are going to suffer injuries at, you know, to some degree, for the remainder of the offseason. So just keep your fingers crossed that, you know, A, they're not long term, and, you know, B, you know, hopefully don't happen to players of significant, you know, immediate value.
Right. That's those are kind of the two things we're still, you know, kind of going to wait and see on Javon Hargrave, what the situation is there. Again, hoping nothing serious. You know, that defensive line, we talked about this Friday, Dave, is a little thin right now. And it's okay to be thin in June, just get everyone healthy for camp. But you have, what, Tua coming off, what, the hand surgery, Alulu with a calf, Hargrave with what might be a shoulder. So it's a good opportunity, though, for the young guys to step up. You know, whether that's an LT Walton to continue to make a jump, Johnny Maxey to get some valuable snaps that he might not get, or definitely won't get once the Lions get healthy, or Rory Filon, LaVon Hooks, or some of these undrafted guys to try to, you know, get a spot.
And as we mentioned on Friday, kind of the initial kind of unofficial reports, of course, the team's not going to comment and doesn't have to comment about the injuries to guys like, you know, anybody, and especially to Hargrave right now. On the surface, you know, and keep your fingers crossed, it doesn't seem like it's anything serious with Hargrave at this point, but, you know, stay tuned on that. We'll have to see if he's able to get out there, you know. Obviously, if he's out there doing something the remainder of this week, that will obviously be a good sign with him, and hopefully, you know, it isn't anything long term. As far as the Steelers go, on, you know, with us, you know, talking on Friday, and of course nothing really transpiring with the team over the weekend. Of course, nothing going on really today with the team, having the team building process over at Dave and Buster's. There were a couple articles on Pro Football Talk that, boy, Mike Florio sure knows how to rile people up during the off season, doesn't he? And look, I get it; it's his job. This is you know, we're fixing to get into the deadest time of the off season here, where it'll be virtually, you know, nothing to talk about. But a few things that Florio wrote about, and Florio will tell you that, you know, he's a Steelers fan, and, you know, he probably takes pride in gigging the fan base a little bit more than others per se. But a few of his articles were just, you know, the types of things that, that in my opinion, you just kind of roll your eyes about. And the first really, I can't remember chronological order here, so I'll start with the you know, what he wrote about Alejandro Villanueva, and all this stems from a post that Bob Labriola had up on Steelers.com, you know, talking about how the, you know, the Steelers' previous dealings with, you know, exclusive rights free agents such as Willie Parker and those kind of things. Well, Mike Florio kind of twisted that into this is evidence of the Steelers trying to put the squeeze on Alejandro Villanueva, and I think not long, you know, several hours after Florio made that post on Pro Football Talk, Bert Lawton, the team's PR, you know, PR spokesman, went on Twitter and said, look, you know, Bob Labriola speaks for himself and himself alone. And, you know, that's the case here. To me, this is not some sort of manufactured thing. Hey, Bob, why don't you write a little bit about this and try to put the squeeze on Alejandro Villanueva?
Right. I don't know what kind of, like, Goodfellas, Sopranos, workshop Florio thinks the Steelers are running over here. But I mean, let's try to assume that would be true, which of course it's not. But what, is Villanueva reading this? Are the Steelers using the Labriola's article and negotiation tactic? Is any fan pointing to this article and sending it to Villanueva? No, to all that. So there's no way that could even make an impact. So it's Labriola's thought, and it's gone, and, you know, it's going to be forgotten about in a week, and I don't know why it was ever made a big issue in the first place.
And look, does Villanueva, or does, you know, one of his family members or somebody read that kind of stuff and read Florio's stuff? I'm sure it happens. I mean, look, you hear players all the time talking about, well, you guys say this, and, you know, and you guys being media and maybe to some degree bloggers or what have you, but this, I mean, none of this is going to matter. I mean, when it comes to Villanueva, right. And as I wrote, look, it'd be nice if I were Alejandro Villanueva, which I'm not. And boy, it'd be nice to be six. There are times in my life when it'd be nice to be 6'7", you know, but I understand why he probably doesn't want to talk to the media, but the further this goes on, the farther people are going to keep saying, well, he's just blowing off the media and you know, claiming that he has to go left. And I understand that. And Villanueva probably feels very, very uncomfortable talking about his contract with the media. I mean, this is obviously kind of foreign territory with him. But if you're him, wouldn't you just like to pull out that book of cliches and just spend about 10 minutes throwing cliche after cliche of, you know, I'm just here right now to kind of help my team and get ready for the 2017 season. I'll let my agent handle the rest of that. And, you know, after we talk about it today, you know, that's all I'm going to talk about it. I mean, wouldn't you rather kind of put this kind of quickly behind you sooner rather than later if you're him?
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely understand that point. Usually, obviously, and I'm probably biased, you know, someone who wants these guys to talk to the media, I would advocate for someone to talk to you, to talk to reporters and kind of get this out of the way. But I can understand Villanueva's apprehension. He doesn't want to say the wrong thing. He wants to just, you know, he's a guy that's clearly just wants to focus on football and not have to talk to the media and say something wrong, quote unquote, and then have that create another media firestorm. So, you know, and really, what is he there to say? You're right. Whatever he would say would just be cliche. So I don't, you know, and I understand the media has their job. They need to talk to these guys. But we all know you're not going to get any answer out of it because there is no answer right now. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. There could be some negotiations, but, you know, it's not anything that Villanueva obviously has to atone to the way that, you know, Martavis Bryant did when he came back. So there's no answer for him to give. So, you know, I'm fine with him not talking and because there's nothing he has to say.
He should just pull out Bull Durham and watch the scene of Crash Davis talking to Nuke LaLoosh about, you know, just pulling out all those cliches. I'm just happy to be here and help the team any way I can. You know, that those kind of things. But
Dave, I do not know any of those words you said. What year did that come out?
Holy moly, I forget. Have you not seen Bull Durham? Seriously, you?
I have not.
Lord, next weekend you need to watch. watchable. It's one of the greatest, probably the greatest baseball movies of all time, in my opinion. It's kind of movie I think when it comes on that you can't, you know, it's like Shawshank Redemption. You just can't turn it off when it's on, even though you've seen it, you know, 50 times. And in your case, zero, I guess, would Bull Durham. But yeah, you got to get that. But back to Villanueva and his situation. And, you know, I don't know how many other ways we can kind of talk about this. I mean, are the Steelers kind of, you know, squeezing Villanueva? I don't think that's the right term. Do they have extreme leverage with him because of the fact that he's an exclusive rights free agent, and that the fact that even after this year, if he does sign that tender and he plays underneath the 1 year tender, well, then he'll be a restricted free agent, you know, next offseason. Then the Steelers can still decide, do they want to put a first round tender on him, a second round tender on him? You know, like it or not, you know, they own Alejandro Villanueva for the next 2 years at extremely, extremely low, you know, salaries, all things considered there. So it, you know, that's why I've said several times, it makes sense when you have that much leverage over a player. It makes sense for you to try to get a fair deal done for both sides right now. And you know, I've stated several times, you know, $6-7 million. They're not going to pay him. You know, he's not going to be the highest paid offensive lineman on the team, and you know, definitely not going to make more than DeCastro and Marquise Pouncey. Now, will he obviously be able to earn more than Ramon Foster? I think so. Will he be able to earn? You know, does he deserve as much or a little bit more than Marcus Gilbert earns right now, which is, you know, $6 million a season? Yeah, I think so, but you know, I not much more than that, right? I mean, we're not talking about, you know, $10-12 million a year contract with them. So, why wouldn't you try to use a leverage, the leverage that you have with a player in a situation such as this during the offseason?
Sure, and it's just common negotiation tactics. Villanueva is using the little bit of leverage he has by not signing his tender right away, and the Steelers can use their leverage, you know, by trying to convince him to take a maybe below market level deal. But the realization that you get paid now, you're going to make a lot more than what you're going to make, you know, on track the next 2 years, and you get your security, and you don't have to worry about, you know, your play time or how well you play or injuries these next two seasons that could, of course, hamper any future, you know, contract talk. So that'll be the dance. You know, me personally, I know some back and forth. Should the Steelers get a long-term deal done with Villanueva? I would really like to, because I think you can get them for, again, pretty well below market value, because you hold all the cards right now, and you get this guy locked up. You don't have to worry about injury, and you know, he's a really good player, and the improvement he's shown and the leaps and bounds he's made is really remarkable, and still probably does not get talked about enough. And to lock the rest of that last piece of the offensive line up would be, I think, fantastic.
And really, the only leverage that Villanueva has right now is the fact of him possibly withholding his services. But I mean, you'd be shocked if he, and we'll see what happens during the mandatory minicamp, but you would be shocked come training camp time, and assume he doesn't have a cut. You would be absolutely shocked if he held out, right?
Yeah, zero.
Even though, I mean, it would be the ultimate. I mean, we know the Steelers in the past with star players, even, you know, they do not negotiate with players until they get in, you know, until they show up for camp. And, you know, even though they could perceivably face an instance where we might not have our starting left tackle, and then what? You know, what do we do? I mean, do you really want Gerald Hawkins starting at left tackle for you? But I mean, it's just way too much to even, I think, speculate, because I think it's crazy to think that a guy like Villanueva would even go that route. You know, with them potentially withholding his services.
Yeah, there's less than zero chance of that happening. Villanueva was a guy that missed a lot of football, obviously, when he was over, in the military. He's not going to miss out on the chance to participate now. And I mean, the guy showed up for the voluntary stuff. He signed the waiver to practice in OTAs, which he didn't have to do, and is a risk on himself. So there's no way he's going to sign the waiver, show up for OTAs, and then all of a sudden hold out or skip mandatory minicamps or hold out for training camp. That would be illogical and certainly out of character for him.
And for all we know, which we don't, the Steelers have told Alejandro, hey, look, just be patient here. We've got to deal with, Le'Veon Bell. We have a July 15th deadline with him for this franchise tag. Let us get past this with, to see where we are with Le'Veon come July 15th. And then after that takes place, then we'll focus on you. And then, of course, Stephon to it as well. So, like I said, it gives Mike Florio something to write about, and sure has. Here we are spending 15 minutes talking about it, and Bert goes on Twitter and replies to it. So I mean, he got the reaction I think that he that he's looking for. But I still, is there a chance Villanueva doesn't get a contract extension this offseason? Absolutely. But sure. As I've written and talked about for some time, I'll be surprised if that doesn't ultimately happen. Speaking of Le'Veon Bell, that's the other kind of focus that. Been a lot of stuff written, I think, about Le'Veon this past or over the weekend. Will the Steelers consider rescinding the franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell? I mean, come on. I mean, this is a team that's talked all off season, starting with Art Rooney II saying how, it's a priority. We want Le'Veon Bell here long term, finish his career here, yada yada, those kind of things. And just because we still have over a month to go until the July 15th deadline, now people are starting to write, well, will the Steelers consider rescinding the franchise tender on Le'Veon Bell? I mean, that's crazy, right?
Yeah, I don't even understand the basis. I understand it's June and there isn't a whole lot going on, but that's just not going to happen. I mean, I don't even want to spend too much time on it because I think it's such a ridiculous premise that, to talk about it more validates it, and it shouldn't be validated in any sense. So, no, not going to happen. It's the last thing that's going to happen. I don't even have a response to it.
And when it comes to Le'Veon Bell specifically, I think Jeremy Fowler reported the other day that Le'Veon Bell was at the team facility last week. Whether it was 1 day, 2 days, three, I don't know. But, he was around team facility. Who knows? Maybe he was getting a checkup on that knee. Maybe he was there talking about, some contract. I don't know. But, look, we've had a lot worse drama during the offseason at this time when it comes to players. That Le'Veon Bell, the contract situations of Le'Veon Bell and Alejandro Villanueva should be, way down the worry list. And it appears as though, according to a report by, who was it? Chris Bradford, I think, talked to Arthur Motes about that whole arm wrestling thing that took place in Las Vegas. What was it? Back in March, I think, somewhere around there. And remember, there was all the scuttlebutt afterwards about how some of those players, I think Motes and Harrison were the two Steelers or two of them that took part in that arm wrestling event. And because it was in Las Vegas, how the NFL frowns on that kind of stuff, and there might be fines or repercussions or whatnot. Motes says he is yet to hear anything from the league on it, really doesn't expect to. And I think Mike Florio wrote about it as well, thinking that, there's probably nothing ever going to come of this. So that's another semi-drama related things with the Steelers that I think nothing to worry about there.
Yep, and I think it's a smart call by the NFL. It would have been silly for them to take any sort of action against the guys to go into Vegas. For many reasons, the league's hypocrisy probably at the top. So much ado about nothing, and thank goodness for that.
All right. Let's see. ESPN released their FPI rankings earlier in the week, and according to their analytics department, if you're into kind of deep analytics, which I love deep analytics and math and those kind of things, they non-surprisingly, in my opinion, give the Steelers an 8 0.5% chance to win Super Bowl LII. And, I mean, really, when you think about how the Patriots are so favored right now, in their latest analytics, you know, breakdown and FPI ratings and all rankings, that's not a surprise, right? I mean, the Steelers are the fourth, you know, when it comes to FPI rankings, they're fourth best behind, third best behind New England and Green Bay. I mean, this is probably the kind of place in rankings where we expect the Steelers to be right now, to be heavy competitors for the AFC crown, but to be behind the Patriots.
Yep, that's exactly what I would have, you know, told you if somebody would ask me about the Steelers' chances to win the Super Bowl this year. I said, you know, they're as good as nearly anybody in the AFC, and that nearly anybody means New England's above them. And that's, of course, a team you're going to be fighting tooth and nail the rest of the way. So, yeah, I think that putting them in the top five and obviously here at third is fair.
All right, I've exhausted my four items that I scribbled down here to kind of talk about here, and I think you want to talk a little bit now about Ben Roethlisberger and specifically, you know, Sean McKevney's doing a two-part series. The first part of it's up right now, or went up on Saturday. The second part will be up later today on Steelers Depot, kind of taking a deeper statistical look into Ben Roethlisberger's road woes over the course of the last several seasons. What do you have to add so far about that?
Yeah, well, first, I know we're 20 minutes into this thing, but I do want to tease. We do have an interview later in this podcast, right, Dave?
Yeah, we have an interview with Steelers 7th-round draft pick Keon Adams. I appreciate you for hitting on that. I forgot to hit, tease that at the open there. I got a chance to talk about 10 minutes with Keon on Sunday, and we hit on a lot of different topics there. And fine young man to speak to, and hopefully all of you will stay tuned for that, I think, you know, 10-minute or so interview at you know, to kind of wrap up this show. So I appreciate you teasing that. So back to Roethlisberger here.
Yeah, you know, definitely read Sean's articles, the one that's already posted as of this recording and then the one that I think you said is going to go up later today. But, you know, I just wanted to get your take, Dave, because there's no right answer to this, because if we knew the answer, if the Steelers knew the answer, this is a problem that would be addressed and ideally fixed. But, you know, there's no question last year Ben was classic Ben at home, but on the road he was an average quarterback that really struggled. And I just want to get your thoughts of why that disparity exists and why do you think Ben struggles so much, you know, away from Heinz Field?
Yeah, I wish I could put my finger on it, you know, mechanics-wise. Mm-hmm. I think it's been a while since I've gone back. Probably would go like to go back and look at the fact you know, how did the interceptions happen, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Were they all on him? How many drops were in those games? Those kind of things. Now, keep in mind, you know, he did have a young a very inexperienced receiving unit last season. Now, that still doesn't explain when does Sean's article goes from what, 2014? Is that right? 2014 to 2016. So even if we wanted to put a lot of it on maybe miscommunications and those types of things on the road with you know, these inexperienced wide receivers, you know, that's last year. You know, what about the, you know, the two seasons prior to that? You know, mechanics, you know, we could spend hours trying to pull out, you know, things, but a lot of times, you know, Ben's not the most mechanically sound quarterback regardless, right?
Mm-hmm. All right. But and, it doesn't affect him at home. I mean, mechanics are generally the same home and road.
Right. You know, and I think when people read part two of Sean's study, I mean, it's going to be kind of inconclusive there as well. So, you know, maybe we'll dig deeper into going back and, you know, look, we're going to have plenty of time into June and July. Mm-hmm. Go back and look at every incompletion. You know, I mean, we obviously have our charting that shows whether or not it was a drop and all like that. And it would be easy for us to go back and look at and pull up all the interceptions and those sort of things. I mean, how much is crowd noise playing into it? You know, silent snap counts and those kind of things. So it is a very hard area to put your finger on.
Yeah, it definitely is. The one thing I was going to circle to, because you have to find something that would be different, obviously, on the road than home, some sort of element. And I think, you know, Ben not being able to run the no huddle as much on the road than obviously he can do at home due to crowd noise and communication, you know, problems hinders him, because, you know, I think it just helps him get into that rhythm and gets that one or two drives going where he can kind of be himself and call the plays and really take control. And, you know, I think when he doesn't get to do that and he has to play a little more structured and with a little less tempo, I think it hurts him. So that's kind of the one thing. And I can't say that that's obviously a fact. I'm not even 100% believing in it myself, but that's kind of the one thing I circle to, is that just not being able to run the no huddle and really play in his element and change tempos for defenses to react to. I think that hurts him.
Yeah, might be, and you know, we could try to study the film, like I said, you know, all off season, and we still might not be, you know, we'll come up with maybe a theory or two, I think at least from a look, the statistics obviously tell you there's a problem somewhere in there, especially over the course of the last three seasons, you know, play, and boy, definitely last season. I mean, it was really, really bad last season. Now, Pro Football Focus had a tweet, I think the last day or two, about Ben, also not being the quarterback that he once was last season on play action. And that's really, before I go diving back into 3 years worth of tape on Roethlisberger on the road, I might go look at our charting real quick and see what happened on those play action plays, because this, you know, when you talk about Roethlisberger ahead of the 2016 season, this guy was solid on play action. So, you know, what happened last year specifically when it comes to play action? You know, was this indeed a case of, were there some drops involved? Were there some bad routes by receivers, last year that kind of, you know, led to this kind of stuff? So, you know, you start adding all these things together, not doing so well on the road last three seasons. And oh, yeah, I guess another thing is how many times did he go deep? You know, how many of those play action, how many of those play action plays were him going more than 15 yards down the field, which in the NFL is regarded as a deep pass. Remember, Sammy Coates was thrown to quite a bit, you know, after week five, and only came down with two passes the rest of the season there. How many of those were play action related? Obviously, Martavis Bryant wasn't with the team last year. They didn't have Marcus Wheaton. You know, you might as well say for the whole season there. Eli Rogers was banged up a little bit. Then, of course, I think sideline, you know, game in there as well. Darius Heyward-Bey, they were without him for several games in the middle of the season as well. So I'm not building in excuses because, you know, I don't know. I'm just saying there's just so many variables, I think, to look at here.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's I think it's needle in a haystack, but it's something the team obviously has to address. And, you know, Ben gets asked about it quite a bit, and so does Tomlin, and I get their answer. It's an understandable one. They say, you know, if we knew what the problem was, we'd fix it. But how long can you say that for? You know, eventually you have to find the problem and identify it and make corrections to it. So that's certainly the hope, it's going to be a combination of things. I don't know if it's – I doubt it's one, you know, singular factor. But maybe this team runs – you know, I know they don't really like to do it, but they run a little more pistol. Maybe they, you know, helps them, you know, with the run game getting downhill, but also, you know, still creates play action, because I think play action is tougher to do when all your linemen are in two-point stances and, you know, you're in shotgun with the back off set. So, you know, Mike Bunchak wants to run more pistol. I listened to a clinic he did, and he said, I would like to run more pistol, and he doesn't get the habit. So maybe that's something they throw in 2017.
When the Steelers open up on the road this year against Cleveland. For all we know, Roethlisberger will go out and complete 69% of his passes for 330 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions, and then what are we going to talk about?
It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, that'll be a good problem to have. So, I mean, it's something to talk about. But, you know, as we've just said several times, just so many things to try to put your finger on. And I appreciate Sean's efforts. I mean, really has some glaring charts and stats related to Roethlisberger's road woes over the course of the last three seasons there. So we'll continue to kind of dig deeper into it, and who knows, you know, maybe Roethlisberger will be asked about it a couple times between now and the start of the regular season of what he thinks, might be the issues there.
Yeah, I hope so, but I have a feeling his answer is not going to be very in-depth because they haven't been so far, so my hopes aren't high.
All right, what else do we have to talk about here?
Well, you know, this is going to go up for tomorrow's article. I did a video on YouTube, the talk to the tapes that we did during the season, and it's just looking at Sammy Coates and, you know, reminding fans about what Sammy Coates brought to this team the first 5 weeks last year before he busted his hand and, you know, was a non-asset the rest of the way. And at the end, I kind of touched on the point of, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Steelers going to four wide receiver sets this year with the release of Darius Green, drafting Juju Smith-Schuster in the second round. Obviously, the talent lies at wide receiver. And while I don't think they're going to do a lot of four wide receiver sets, they're not going to be the Jets who do it about a third of the time. You know, I definitely could see them incorporating some of that into the offense this year a lot more than usual. But whenever we talk about four wide receiver sets, I think most people go to A.B., Martavis Bryant, Eli Rogers, and Juju Smith-Schuster. Well, I want to look at it from a slightly different perspective and say, what about A.B., Bryant, Sammy Coates, and then one of Rogers and Smith-Schuster? In my case, maybe Smith-Schuster. Because, I mean, could you imagine if you're a defense trying to defend, you know, a healthy A.B., Coates, and Bryant, and the speed and the vertical threat on the field? I mean, does any defense have those kind of three top, you know, athlete cornerbacks to defend? I don't think so. So I think that's an exciting thought to me about getting Coates on the field and adding that another huge big play, you know, vertical threat for defenses to deal with.
Well, I think especially too, if you have these receivers, you know, cross trained to be able to move around, and obviously that's something that we hear year in, year out, how Richard Mann's good about, you know, making sure all of his wide receivers know every position on the field. But with that said, I mean, realistically, how many reps can you get your players, even through OTAs and training camp, of moving them around to try to – I mean, you're out there at training camp. How often do you see some of these guys actually, you know, moving around and playing, you know, the various positions?
Yeah, I mean, Coach really hasn't done a lot in the slot, though a little bit, or at least reduce splits, you know, if they change a split, you know. But generally, you know, like you said, Mann and Haley, I think, take pride in having their guys at least be familiar with other positions. And if you have some specialty package plays, and if you make, an effort to rep some of those four wide receiver sets, these guys will get more comfortable, you know, in the slot. And again, you can change the splits and have these guys stacked out wide so they're not maybe truly playing in the slot. So I think you can avoid that issue pretty well. But I just look at the talent that you have. And again, I understand Coates needs to have a good camp. I mean, you know, duh. But I think he will. And I think it's going to be another compelling reason to get three guys that can, you know, take vertical any single snap on the field at once. I mean, it's going to force defenses to play too high shells. There's no way you can go four wide receiver sets with those guys, that talent on the field, and then play single high. I mean, that's just asking for trouble. So I think it's a really entertaining idea, and I don't think it's one I've heard talked about yet.
Yeah, and I, you know, I, it's one of those things. Do I think more four wide receiver sets can happen, and especially with you know, Ladarius Green now gone? Yeah, I suppose, but it's one of those things that we'll have to see it to believe it, right? You know, I mean, because
sure.
And here's the thing with Sammy Coates, and I've said this for quite a while now, and this is hand injury and mental aspect right now, that he may or may not still be dealing with, kind of associated with what took place last year after that hand injury with the drops and all those things related to that, is the fact that he hasn't shown us that he's not anything more than a one-trick pony right now. And if you go back to even before, about this time last season when Kevin Colbert's doing the interviews, I think I think specifically during the Friday Night Lights practice when, you know, he talks on Sirius every year during that show, he talked about Sammy Coates has got to become a better route runner. And even though Sammy had a tremendous start to the 2016 season in those first five games, we still haven't seen, you know, Sammy's still, you go deep. And, and you know, that still kind of concerns me. Now, Martavis, look, we've seen Martavis do a lot of good things when he's been on the field. But even him right now, you know, he obviously is a more well-rounded receiver than Sammy Coates, in my opinion. But is he really any more than a go-deep guy himself right now?
Yeah, he's got to prove he can be more well-rounded, and I think it's more of a concern for Bryant than Coates, because Bryant's going to be an every-down kind of guy, assuming, you know, the NFL reinstates him and he's the Z receiver. For Coates, I'm less concerned, because, you know, if you're a one-trick pony, but you're really good at that trick, and I think Coates is, you know, to play in some specialty, you know, packages, good enough for me. I think that's an asset when your number four receiver potentially can be a huge playmaker and give you some, you know, 10 quality snaps, and maybe a big play or two every other game.
And, you know, go back to talking about people that ran routes well. Emmanuel Sanders and Marcus Wheaton were probably, you know, outside of AB, two of the better route runners the Steelers have had in recent years. And what did that get them?
I just think it's an idea to flow out there. Obviously, four receiver sets have been talked about, but I don't think anyone's mentioned Coates in it. And I love, you know, the Steelers offense, as much as anybody in the NFL, wants big plays and big playmakers, and Coates fits that bill.
And I think, too, whenever you have the situations where you're forcing teams to maybe play more two deep safeties and maybe some man up underneath that, well, then you get the instance where, and we've seen the Steelers do it quite a bit last year against teams that would take that angle. Is, boy, you sure open up guys like Le'Veon Bell and your slot receivers to run a lot of those those legal pick plays up underneath and just completely just rub those guys off. And then you get Le'Veon Bell in the open field, you know, on a 3 yard reception that turns into a 17-yard play.
That's a fantastic point, Dave. And that's the other element, too, that when you consider vertical attacks, it's, you know, even if you don't hit the home run on every play, which you won't, if you expand the defense vertically, it opens up things underneath. So now, like you said, you have Bell one-on-one with a linebacker underneath. You have your best playmaker, Le'Veon Bell, in space against one linebacker. If the defense is playing man coverage, their backs are to the ball, they're late to react. It's a win-win-win, I think, for everyone involved. And again, that's where they're really potency of the Steelers offense comes into play. When you can be a vertical attack, the defense takes away that vertical shot, but you still burn them underneath when you have a guy like Bell, let's say a slot receiver.
And, you know, when you have a guy like Bell that can do that kind of, we've seen him do it, you know, there's no room for improvement when it comes to him, especially running what we like to call, I don't know, what do you call it, an option route, a choice route, where it all depends on you know, what the defender, you know, whether or not he's got inside or outside leverage on you depends. You know, your quarterback and your running back, in this case, Le'Veon Bell, obviously have to be on the same page. We saw, actually, when Ladarius Green was on the field last year of Roethlisberger and Green not being on the same page when it comes to those choice routes, right? Because wasn't there one interception? What was it against
the Giants?
Buffalo, wasn't it?
Buffalo, yes. You're right, Buffalo, yes.
It's amazing. I'm almost 50 years old. As much damage as I've done to my three brain noodles that I can tell you that, but I can't tell you what time I ate yesterday. But
50 years young, Dave. 50 years young.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right, right?
You're right. Yeah, Buffalo.
And that was one of those instances where you might want to put it on Ben Roethlisberger, but I mean, it was just a miscommunication of the receiver breaking the wrong way. And I guess where I'm going with this is, look, you obviously don't have Marcus Wheaton there. You didn't have him there really last year anyway. Do we need to go back and kind of watch how Eli Rogers performed in those situations?
Yeah, I think anytime you look at a slot receiver, you know, you want to see how he works on the option routes, works on third down. Those are kind of some of the highlights to look at any slot receiver. So, sure, you know, I think that's definitely an area to focus on for Rodgers and Jesse James as well.
And this is also an area, too, that we would hope. Look, I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster does not have blazing speed and not a guy that you're probably going to use a ton, you know, as a Z or whatnot to go vertical. But he is a guy that, if smart enough, we've talked about this several times since he was drafted, that depending on how quickly he can pick things up and all, you would, you know, is there potential? You go back to Hines Ward. If there's one thing Hines Ward did well during his career as a Steelers player was running that choice or that option route, and it wasn't pretty statistical wise. You know, say what was it, 10.8 yards per reception? You look at that and go, oh, mm-hmm. eek. You know, but the man, mm-hmm. the man made a living of moving chains and getting, you know, key receptions, and, you know, 10 yards doesn't sound like a lot, but 10 yards will move the chains in most mm-hmm. instances. I guess where I'm going is, do we have maybe a potential Hines Ward type player in Juju Smith-Schuster?
Yeah, no, I that's the comparison that I think he's gotten a lot. I think Anquan Boldin's come up quite a bit as well, and I like that comparison pretty good for Smith-Schuster as well. But, you know, I think his skill set is similar, but I don't want to start, you know, getting too high on these big, you know, names because I don't want to put that kind of pressure on him. But, you know, that's the type of receiver that you're getting, and that's why I repeatedly said that I think he can push Eli Rogers for the starting, you know, slot job. And I understand that's a tough position to learn, and Rogers, of course, has the leg up with now going into his third year in the Steelers system. But, you know, Smith-Schuster got drafted in the second round for a reason, and those guys don't sit.
A guy like Justin Hunter, he needs help on the roster, right? Because even though some people probably are afraid and say that you should not consider Eli Rogers as a roster lock, he's about as close of a roster lock if he's not, right? Talking about Eli Rogers.
I could see a case where Eli Rogers does not make this roster. I don't think the odds are high, but, you know, if Smith-Schuster takes a starting slot job, and if DeMarcus Ayers becomes starting punt returner, where does that leave Eli Rogers?
Yeah, but even so, I would think because of his experience now, albeit 1 year playing in the slot there, that even if he were to get overtaken by a guy, look, as much as I hope and want and like to see Juju, I mean, Juju's going to see the field, at some point. Now, is it going to be sooner rather than later? Are we talking about 500 snaps throughout the season? Are we talking about 300 snaps for Juju? Are we talking 700 snaps for Juju? Don't know, but I think I think. The hope is, look, when you spend a second-round draft pick on a guy, you're going to be trying to get him on the field. So let's save the instance, you know, Juju just has a tremendous rest of the offseason, on into training camp, great preseason, and he overtakes Eli Rogers as the quote-unquote starting slot wide receiver. I still think you should carry Eli Rogers to back him up.
Well, I mean, Ayers could be the backup. I mean, Ayers, you know, in limited action, I get that. But he, you know, he's obviously slot capable. That's where his home is going to be. And, he, you know, I think he performed well there last year.
All right. You know, fair enough.
I'm not trying to kick Rogers off the roster. I'm just saying I could see that scenario where that happens. I don't know. I don't think it's terribly likely, but I could see it.
All right. Eli Rogers, speaking of him, he talked this past week about how he knows he probably has to win that punt return. So punt returner job. I mean, that's true, right? I mean, barring injury, of course. I mean, if he doesn't win that punt returner job, I mean, how can you make a valid argument? I mean, you obviously, I think in your first 53-man roster prediction, had seven wide receivers. I mean, deep down inside, though, you obviously, I don't think you wouldn't take my money to bet on that happening. So, I mean, can you make any other legitimate argument of Rogers making the 53-man roster if he doesn't win the punt returner job?
Rogers, you said?
I mean, not Rogers.
Ayers. It'd be really tough, but, you know, there's two things I circle back to. One, I think Ayers does have a really strong work ethic. I think he's shown that time and time again. And Mike Tomlin has been super high on DeMarcus Ayers. Whenever Tomlin's been asked about kind of the second year rookie guys, I think during owners meetings, he sat down with Missy Matthews and Missy asked a question about, you know, the second year guys, Burns and Hargrave and Sean Davis, and the excitement level there. Well, Tomlin redirected the question and started talking about DeMarcus Ayers and how excited he was to watch DeMarcus Ayers work. I mean, that was just, you know, totally on his own. So I think Tomlin is pretty high on him But yeah, you know, Ayers has to bring some sort of value to this team. You have to be a starter somewhere, you know, whether it's a starting gunner, or, you know, a starting, you know, return guy, if you're any back end receiver. So, you know, a guy like Sammy Coates, his role might be, you know, starting gunner and, you know, maybe some working for wide receiver sets. For DeMarcus Ayers, it's going to be as a starting punt returner. So certainly that's his best path to play, no doubt.
And Justin Hunter, absolutely something that we've talked about several times. He doesn't have it on his resume so far, but he better somehow become a gunner or something along those lines. He has to have some special teams value, one would think, if he's going to make it, right? Or, you know, or
yeah,
obviously an injury ahead of him or something.
Sure, just an awful camp by Sammy Coates or something like that. I don't want to completely discredit Hunter because he's playing with the best quarterback he's ever played with, and I think he's going to legitimately look good in camp when you're – what is he? How tall is he? 6'4"? Is he 6'4"? I think he is.
He's real big. Yeah, him and Martavis share a lot of similarities in measurables.
Right, and so he's going to make some plays in camp. There's no doubt about it. He's going to make some really spectacular-looking plays down the field. But a lot of other guys on this team are as well. It's not going to be unique to him. So I don't. You know, he could have a good camp and still get cut. You know that's possible. But I don't want to forget about him. But he's outside looking in.
All right, good job today, Alex. A very Seinfeld type episode. We managed.
Is that a show about nothing? Is that
yeah,
what you're saying?
Yeah, we managed to have a 50 minute show about nothing. No, in all series, I'm sure people know how hard it is to kind of come up with topics to talk about during the off season here, and we'll use the final 10 minutes or so of this episode to present you my interview, my Sunday interview, or when was it? Saturday interview. I'm messing my days up. Sunday interview with seventh round draft pick Keon Adams here. So if you will, hold on through this break and we'll give you that interview. Okay, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast, and I'm pleased to be joined today by the Pittsburgh Steelers' seventh-round draft pick out of Western Michigan, outside linebacker Keon Adams. Keon, welcome to the Terrible Podcast.
Oh, man, thank you for having me.
Keon, let's get right to it here. Seventh-round draft pick of the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course, fine career at Western Michigan there, where you looks like you played in a total of 51 games, had 29 starts, I believe, 14 and a half sacks during that time, 7.5 of those sacks coming just last season there. We hear it all the time, Keon, about players going through you obviously went through the rookie mini camp, and then now you have 2 weeks of the OTAs underneath your belt, and all the time you hear about, boy, the speed from the rookie mini camp to OTAs is quite considerable. What was your experience, after your rookie mini camp, and then now with 2 weeks underneath your belt of OTAs, how has it been for you adjusting to that speed?
Starting off rookie mini camp, a lot of the guys that were going in, they were going in really not knowing anything about the playbooks and things like that. So once we got in there initially, all we tried to do was learn the playbook. And, once you get out there and things start moving around, like the moving parts, like it's easy to see things on a board and on paper to memorize it. But once you get out there on the field and things start moving around, a lot of people are just worried about their job, so there's really not a lot of communication going on as far as amongst the defense. And that was really the big thing. It was definitely a slower tempo as far as the athletes that I'm going against now, as far as the veterans. They're faster. Those are well-established guys who've been in the league and had an off-season or two to really go out there and train. So, it definitely shows. But being out there with the veteran guys on defense like Shazier, Dupree, guys like that, and just hearing the verbiage, hearing the language, them getting everybody set up, it's allowing me to play faster and allowing a lot of young guys to play faster. So from as far as that standpoint, yeah, rookie minicamp was kind of slow because everybody was worried about doing what they had to do. Being out there with those guys who've been in defense for a year or two, it makes it a lot easier as far as my job and me knowing what to get set up and how to get set up faster, especially going against guys like Big Ben and Landry Jones and Josh Stiles, who's getting the offense out there and trying to move it against us. So it hasn't been too much of a difference, but you can definitely tell the little small things about it. And I think I've adjusted well. Like I said, the veteran guys have helped me and the younger guys adjust. So it's going well, pretty smooth right now.
Have you been most of your reps, I assume, on the right side there? And I would think maybe either, you know, with James Harrison doing kind of limited work right now, which is kind of normal for him. I think T.J. Watt probably running first team on that right side. Are you running behind him on the right side?
Well, right now it's Ciccolo, then me. I'm actually playing mainly the right side, yeah. But every now and then I go switch to the left side just to show that I'm versatile and I can do it for both positions. So, mainly I'm on the right side, though.
All right. And, you know, but when you go back and you look at some of your tape at Western Michigan and all, you know, it's obvious that you did play some on your feet. How much, you know, did you stand up at Western Michigan, and how much did they actually ask you to drop into those hook zones and those type of things into coverage?
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but I didn't play defensive line until I actually got to college. I actually would play quarterback, linebacker, my safety and stuff like that in high school. So I was used to playing on my feet. It was new to me to actually go in and play defensive end because I was so used to being in space and stuff like that. But, I mean, Western Michigan asked me to do a lot as far as dropping the coverage, whether it's been in different man pressures or zone pressures. I would have to drop in a curl flat, sometimes in the hook zone, depending on where we was, where the ball was lined up on which hash, excuse me, or even when it was man pressures and me and my safety, my weak side linebacker, where we would have to communicate and we would have the two backs in the backfield. So, I mean, they did a pretty good job of especially who we were playing, game planning, and some teams forced us to do that, and a lot of other teams just allowed me to stay in a defensive end position and just rush the passer. So they asked me to do it whenever they needed me to do it. But it hasn't really been too much of a big transition because, like I said, I dropped and played so many different positions that required me to play in space in high school that it was something that I just really had to get back into that motion of doing, and I think I've adjusted pretty well.
I tell you, when I was going back through some of the game books from last year from your games at Western Michigan, I totaled up that you had you obviously had 49, I think, total tackles, but 25 of those tackles constituted what we like to call run stops, where, you know, those are unsuccessful plays for the opposing offense on running plays. Do you feel like you're a little bit? Do you feel like you're underrated as a run defender?
Most definitely. I definitely feel like I was underrated, and a lot of people seeing me coming into this whole process as just only a pass rusher and a situational guy. But, I mean, it's not my job to really give my opinion. All I can do is go out there and work, and I'm definitely trying to prove that in camp as far as right now with as much as we can do without pads. But definitely going into Latrobe, into preseason, that I'm definitely a two-way player. I'm not just a pass rush guy, and so, I mean, I just let my work and my tape speak for itself instead of just really kind of getting into the whole politics of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's quite a few of your games from last season up on YouTube, but when you go further back into the years, there are not as many. And I was trying to look and see, you know, obviously with the Steelers and as a rookie, they're going to ask you to do a lot of special teams work. How much special teams work did you get in your earlier years at Western Michigan? And was it mostly on punt coverage or punt return or kickoff? You know, what kind of experience did you have in that area?
I did first few couple of years. I did punt. I was in the shield. Didn't really ask me to run down the cover too much. I was just kind of the last line of defense as far as prevent anybody who got free, really, on the backside. Then we kind of switched it up to like a more rugby formation, more rugby punt the previous year. So, and I guess as far as my snaps had increased where I wasn't coming out the game, so I really didn't play too many special teams going into the previous years or the latter years of my career. But I played kickoff return, I think maybe all 4 years. So, that was really the main two areas of special teams that I really got some reps in on, especially actually playing it in the game, so punt and kick return.
So you're getting to know Danny Smith pretty good right now, right?
Oh, yeah. Trust me. Me and Danny Smith are building a great relationship. I'm just soaking up all the knowledge that I can from anything that I can put myself into as far as going out there, whatever I can do as far as helping the team and helping myself get a chance to make this roster, that I'm willing to do it. I definitely want to be an all-force phase special teams guy, whether it's running down there, kickoff return, punt return. just whatever I can do to help the team is all I'm really looking for at this point. I know I've got a lot of room. There's a lot of room for growth, and I have a lot of room to improve. So that's really where my head is right now.
I think you during the pre-draft process, I think you weighed in somewhere around 247. What are you tipping the scales at about right now?
Around the same weight, anywhere between 246 and 250. So it's probably still around the same way. I'm definitely, as far as my physique, definitely seeing the differences as far as me being stronger and me kind of bulking. Look, it's not really, I'm eating right, especially being up here at the Steelers organization. They make sure you eat right as far as in the calf. So I'm eating right, going through my lifts with Coach Geese, and man, I'm just making sure I stay focused and giving it everything I got each and every day.
A lot of people probably don't know that your defensive line coach during your last year at Western Michigan was Jimmy Williams, and I was sorry to read that. Of course, they've had some coaching staff changes there at Western Michigan. I think Jimmy Williams was let go, but Jimmy Williams, of course, spent 12 seasons in the NFL playing for, I think, the Lions, the Vikings, and the Buccaneers, and you know, obviously you obviously had a great 2016 season. You know, were you able to learn quite a bit from Jimmy Williams during that one season, and anything in particular that you can point to that you learned from Jimmy during that one season?
Oh, of course. I mean, he totally changed and redefined my whole game, and I definitely feel like it showed as far as the big jump I took from my junior year to my senior year. Just the fundamentals, the small things, the technique. He always told us it's the tedious repetition that produces greatness. And so whatever we did as far as just going out and just working any and everything, like as far as our weaknesses, we wasn't focusing on our strengths. We wanted to get better at our weaknesses because our strengths would grow in due time. He really changed the way I thought, just my whole mind, my whole thinking process, just the way as I watched film. He allowed me to grow and develop as far as into becoming a man. And really one of the main things that I took from him was just making sure that I'm always accountable, as far as everyone can hold me accountable to my actions, and I can also as well hold myself accountable to my actions. So that was really probably one of the main things from the many lessons that he taught me that really stuck out in his only 1 year there. So he really changed my life in a lot of different aspects, not only on the field but also off.
Has it sunk into you yet that, I'm sure it has by now, that you're a member of the Steelers and how large Steelers Nation is and you know, the people rooting for you? You know, have you had a chance now after two OTAs to sit back and kind of catch your breath and at least somewhat enjoy, you know, your initial accomplishment here?
It's still really early on as far as this whole journey of being in the NFL. So I really haven't really allowed myself to, you know, sit back and really seek any comfort. I've just been really I guess it really won't hit me until come game day. I'm really run down on the field after, you know, saying the 53-man roster has been put out or whatnot. I guess that's when it really hit me. But for right now, I'm just trying to focus on what I can do to get to that point and just taking it one day at a time. Being up here in Pittsburgh and just putting on that black and gold each and every day, it's a blessing, and I never take it for granted. But given that it's so early on as far as in this career, that I just want to make sure that I'm doing whatever I can do to help the team and just help myself make the 53-man roster. So until then, it really won't be no soaking in the sun.
Well, you're about a quarter way through the process right now. You obviously have another week of OTAs left and then the mandatory mini camp, and then you'll get some time off before training camp. And let me tell you, a lot of people are excited about you in Steeler Nation. And, you know, we wish you nothing but the best. And please stay healthy the rest of the off season. And we really look forward to watching your progress, you know, on into training camp and the preseason. So stay healthy, and we appreciate you joining us today on A Terrible Podcast, Keon.
Oh, man, thank you so much, and I appreciate it. Y'all have a blessed day, man. Let's get to it. Let's get to work.
All right, good stuff there with Keon Adams, a fine, fine young man, and I definitely appreciate him clearing out some time to give me, to talk to me, and I think we covered a lot of interesting topics there, Alex, as well there. So, Alex, anything to add?
No, go Pens. That's all I have to add.
Absolutely. Go. Let's go Pens. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow my co-host, David Todd, at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can, of course, follow Alex Cazora at Alex_Cazora. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, you can go to SteelersDepot.com, find that donate button, upper right navigational bar. The Steelers OTAs will finish out their third and final week this week. Alex and I, or David and I, will be back on Friday to kind of try to wrap everything up in a bow for you as to what happened. And in the meantime, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.